Part 1. Unquiet. Chapter 1. Burnt Offerings. Traoris, the Lightning Fields. A body lay in the grey ash, transhuman, male. His skin was the colour of coal, and his battered armour had scalloped edges as though it had been fashioned from green scales. A salamander. A sword lay a finger length from his grasp. A warrior. He had met the fate of most who walked that violent road, another corpse among many. The wound in his chest, the size of a fist, had killed him, but his left eye was also badly damaged. He hadn't been reaching for the sword when he died, though. His still fingers grasped for something else. A hammer. A flash lit up the sky overhead in veins of pearlescent light. An eyelid quivered in response, nothing more than a nerve tremor, the last firing of neural synapses before brain death. Another flash. A bolt of lightning struck the earth, close. A finger trembled. Another nerve tremor. A third flash. Thunder resounded. He blinked. The corpse who was not a corpse, trapping a freeze frame of what was coming for him across the ash. His other eyelid had been cauterized and stayed shut, a ball of throbbing agony harbored behind it. Sentience returned. Time and place reasserted themselves. Conscious thought resumed. Pain. Much pain. Lightning arced from the dry and cloudless sky of Traoris. Numeon blinked again as the bolt jerked wildly, splitting into separate arteries and igniting the darkness with violent flashes. Forks of light hit the ground like thrown spears, almost striking his body this time. Death would be a mercy, not because of the pain of his wounds, but the agony of his failure.
Vulcan!
Numeon's voice came out as a dry-throated rasp. No, not Vulcan. It had been Erebus, and now his agent had fled with the Fulgurite. Grammaticus, the spy, liar, traitor. Another bolt earthed nearby, and Numeon grimaced. That made five since he had come round. Each belligerent strike brought the storm closer. He had no desire to see what would happen if he remained where he was when a sixth or seventh fork hit the surface. Moving was proving difficult. A patch of spilled blood encircled his body, slowly spreading in a dark morass his enhanced physiology was impotent to staunch. When the Emperor had created his space marines, he had made them hardy, but they were not indestructible. Nor were their primarchs, as some poor sons had come to know. Numeon would refute the claims of his father's death, though, if he lived long enough. His chest was a mess of broken bone carapace and damaged internal organs. He drank and breathed blood, not air. Erebus's bolt pistol had seen to that. Even being blind in one eye and unable to see it at that moment, he knew his armor was more arterial red than Drake green. Numeon's injuries, his near paralysis, left a stark conclusion.
I am dying.
Even transhumans had limits, and Artellus Numeon had reached his. Though his mind rebelled against the prospect of his death, his physical body could not support the lie. Another crack of lightning struck close, scorching the earth, just like the bombs and cannons that had rained death upon Istvan V. Weakly, Numeon turned his head to track the bolt's trajectory. The flash echoed across his retina, multiplying repeatedly, then fading into sharp relief, before ultimately dissolving into a memory of sight. In its wake, he saw vortices of harsh grey sand scudding across the wastes of Traoris, like insubstantial djinn of old Abyssinia, carrying the reek of death and the stench of burnt earth. Only when the vortices grew larger and became more uniform did Numeon realize it wasn't just the wind rolling off some distant and unseen sea. It was a ship, which meant the fire arc could still be aloft, and so he dared to hope. During the events that followed, Numeon would learn there was precious little hope left in a galaxy at war. A desert stretched away into the distance, endless and black. Crested with high dunes and formidable iron bulwarks, it had become a vista of devastation, thronged with the dead and dying. Some of the fallen lay half buried in blood-soaked sand, others baked in their armor, slowly burning in the sun. The stink of putrefaction was so ripe it had attained form, a rank and physical mass that weighed heavy on the shoulders. It was chaos on the black sand. True chaos. Brothers slain. Betrayal most foul. Details of the massacre fled as if fearful of being recalled, though they would be forever lodged in Numeon's eidetic memory. The black of the desert was usurped by the darkness of a cell, the dying screams of his brothers replaced by maddening quietude in which a thought was louder than a shell blast. Iron shackles linked his wrists and snaked to his ankles too. It was hardly necessary. The river of Numeon's strength had ebbed to little more than vapor. He was naked, apart from the lower half of his armor's undermesh sublayer, the many old wounds and branding scars starkly visible. His battle plate was destroyed anyway, damaged beyond repair. The cold of his cell, the chill of the void bleeding through the bare metal, was as adverse to him as shadow was to the sun. He shivered. Rudimentary medical work had been done to re-knit his body. It healed, but would be badly scarred. At least the hole in his chest had been stitched back up. His captors had the craft for more effective surgeries. They just wanted Numeon to suffer. He suspected it was also why they had left him the hammer. It was a relatively simple thing. Short haft, square head, a single jewel stud set into the pommel. Crafted as a piece of ornamentation, it more accurately resembled a fuller, the preferred tool of a blacksmiter. Humble appearances often belied more esoteric significance. It was more than just a hammer. It was also a symbol. For Numeon, now the last warden of the pyre, it represented hope. So grievously wounded, Numeon clung to the sigil of Vulcan as if it were his mortal thread, in the fear that if even one finger slipped, then he too would be lost. His eye stung with the potency of hellfire, reminding him of that mortality and wrenching him from fanciful notions. Feeling his consciousness slipping, he chose to supplant poetry with fact, using the focus of his thoughts as an anchor. Fenrisians had numerous words to describe snow and ice, but those who came from Nocturne or believed in the Promethean Creed had many ways to define fire, and these terms varied across the Seven Realms or Sanctuary Cities. In Hesiod, known as the Seat of Kings, it was hellfire. In Themis, City of Warlords, they used Urgrek. Both were old, lyrical words for the deep magma flows at the nadir of Mount Deathfire, the bubbling heartblood of Nocturne. It was hot, promising crippling agony to any who touched it or even strayed within its stifling aura. Only the deep drakes craved its radiating warmth and the natural solitude it offered on account of it being anathema to most other forms of life. Protean fire, as described by inhabitants of the jewel city of Epithemis, was claimed to be the vital spark that took the souls of the dead and the husks they had become and restored them to the world, albeit changed and renewed. Such beliefs persisted in Skarok, called the Dragon's Spine, and Ethonian, the Fire Spike, but each realm used a different word, Protan and Morphean, respectively. Fabrikar, as it was referred to in the merchant's sprawl of Climene, was the forgesmith's flame, the heart heat that tempers metal, the mundane creator. In the beacon city of Heliosa, it was Feron. Imulus was the world ender, and all seven cities uttered it the same, and often in hushed whispers, for it was the unbound flame, and had been a part of Nocturnian creation myth since before the fabled days of the first Igniacs and the metal shapers of old. Numeon knew all their names and every variation across every city, just as he knew the names of countless others, and he clung to them as he clung to the fuller's haft, separating purpose from agony, so that he might rise and live. Live. Not for himself, but for an errant father whom Numeon believed in above all else. His faith, not the tawdry, ephemeral faith associated with religion, but the true and honest conviction that something was real in spite of empirical evidence, was the vital force flowing through his veins, and the eternal fire igniting his mind. His belief manifested as a simple fact. Two words. Vulcan lives. The dull grinding of gears brought Numeon out of his deepening torpor. His cell door opened, admitting a thin shaft of light into the darkness that widened as the door climbed and slowly disappeared into an aperture in the ceiling. A figure stood silhouetted in the light. His form was power-armored, further bulking out his broad and formidable transhuman frame. Oath papers bedecked his torso and shoulders like a contagion, but Numeon took care to lower his eyes from what was scrawled upon each strip of flesh parchment. They were damning words, born by those who had turned from the Emperor's enlightenment and embraced old gods. Such things used to be mocked as stories of overactive imaginations. No one did so anymore. Numeon gripped the sigil tighter and tried to stand. He got as far as one knee before his defiance was overruled by his fatigue. Shaking his head, the figure outlined in silhouette tuttered.
Still weak.
It was less a question, more an observation.
Where is that fabled endurance, son of Nocturne?
Asked Zenut Sul. His voice was sibilant, but possessed a richness at odds with his rasping cadence. Zenut Sul had introduced himself soon after Numeon was taken, and had awoken aboard the Wordbearer's ship. He had seemed a peculiarly ordinary legionary at first, with close-cropped fair hair and an oddly symmetrical face with Colchisian runes etched down both right and left aspect. It was as if he wore the face of every man and no man at the same time. His eyes were youthful, yet captured a sense of fathomless experience only seen in veterans. In the 6 weeks since he had been taken captive, Numeon had failed to divine Zenut Sul's origin, a fact that amused his captor greatly.
Why has your father's strength deserted you when you need it the most,
Zenut Sul taunted. Numeon replied by gritting his teeth, glowering through his one good eye. The light stretched further into the cell, bathing Numeon in an ugly yellow glow that gave his skin a sickly pallor.
Your wounds look improved,
muttered Zenut Sul. He crouched down onto his haunches, seizing Numeon's chin. A pained grimace twisted the salamander's face as the word-bearer's armored fingers bit into flesh.
I wonder, son of Nocturne, he said, are you ready to speak?
Zenut Sul's warm smile but cold eyes confronted Numeon. It was an expression he had come to know well, along with the traitor's inherent lack of mercy and predilection for inflicting pain.
I hurt you because you asked me to, son of Nocturne.
It was as if he had cored out Numeon's mind as well as his badly stitched flesh.
Do you remember the question?
Zenutsul asked, incrementally increasing the pressure on Numeon's chin.
The Fulgurite, where is it?
Numeon made no sound beyond the wheezing of breath sawing in and out of his lungs.
Tell me, said Zenutsul, what do you know of Barthuza Narek?
Still the salamander gave no answer. Zenutsul smiled a second time, his expression pitying.
Are you really asking me to do it again?
He lowered his head, resigned. When he faced Numeon once more, his eyes were dark, abyssal pits. The richness in his tone became a resonance, as if one voice overlapped another and they were speaking fractionally out of sync.
I serve, he said, and inclined his head. You serve,
he nodded at Numeon.
One of us is going to disappoint his master. It won't be me, son of Nocturne.
Now Numeon grinned, exposing red-rimed teeth.
Something amuses you?
Zenutsul asked. Numeon kept grinning. To a casual observer, it would have looked insane.
You wish to speak?
Numeon nodded slowly.
Then give me your words, and all of this can end.
Letting go of the prisoner's chin, Zenutsul stood up and stepped back. It took Numeon a few precious moments to marshal his strength. He wanted this utterance to have import. He wanted his jailer to remember. This time he rose to his feet, and though he shook and trembled with the effort, he did not fall. Eyes wide, glaring with defiance, Numeon roared,
Vulcan lives!
Zenutsul lashed out savagely, driving the air from Numeon's lungs with a heavy punch and flooring him. The jailer crouched back down.
You are weak because your father is dead. You just don't have the wit to see it.
Something barbed and metallic flashed in Zenutsul's hand.
I will show you.